As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman on Sunday morning. And this Sunday morning, we had breaking news to address, so much so that we had to scrap our original podcast intro and start over. So, Ed Orgeron, the LSU coach who won the national title in 2019, even after his big win over Florida yesterday, is out. The school and Orgeron have reached a separation agreement. Bruce, from your understanding, he will still coach the rest of this season, but he's done after that.
Correct. This had been going on for a little bit, because at one point I remember saying, if you win, the next two games, does that change it? And he was like, I think they've already made their decision, essentially. And so when they beat Florida, even with like half a team, I don't think that wasn't changing anything, it was just a matter of when does this get finalized in terms of the contract and everything. And this isn't like a for cause thing. They're going to have to pay him a lot of money to go away. And, I think the key things here is basically Ed Orgeron was not the guy that, the new AD or relatively new AD Scott Woodward, had hired. He's not the one, he was there before. So it's crazy in this regard. It's 21 months from the time he wins a national title, and Scott Woodward and the new president, they want somebody else in there. So we'll see who they, who they end up hiring. But it was just kind of, the whole thing was a little bizarre in the regard of, it's kind of unprecedented in this regard. Because I've said this before, people can talk about the Gene Chizik comparison, but it's really not the same thing just because Chizik had the 1 year. And I think that in this case, Scott Woodward has made some splashy hires. I mean, he got Chris Peterson when he was at Washington. He got Jimbo when he was at A&M. And now, obviously, the bar is going to be sky high because not only do you have to win a national title, like, you better not have an off year after the national title or else they will fire you.
Yeah, it's very NFL-like. It's very what have you done for me lately. Now, I think that there was an appearance of instability because he hired Bo Pelini last year and it blew up in his face spectacularly. He changes out both sides of the ball this year with young, unproven coordinators, and they start 3-3. And with a bad loss at Kentucky. And I think people just felt like, the national title season, he got hailed for the hire of Joe Brady. Obviously he brought in Joe Burrow. It wasn't like schools were beating down their door to bring in Joe Burrow. He did everything right for that season. And they had a remarkable season, one of the best in the history of the sport. And then it just seemed like after that, he couldn't make a right decision. Now, I do think that if this had come out a week ago, everybody would be like, yeah, makes sense. They just beat Florida 49-42. Their running game that was so dormant before took off. I'm not saying one game changes the whole course of your program by any means, but it's just weird timing. to have this come out, and he gets to go on a victory tour. I think this is, I mean, the story of the of him after the 2019 season was kind of a feel-good story of a guy who is you know, born and bred Louisiana. When you think Louisiana, you think Coach O, having this big redemption, and then less than 2 years later, he's out. This leads to the obvious question, who does LSU go after now?
That's a good question. I mean, I reported on our Big Noon show Saturday morning that from my sources that there is a lot of interest from some influential people inside LSU who are really high on Mel Tucker from Michigan State. Now, Mel Tucker was a Nick Saban assistant. He worked there in the early 2000s. He knows the SEC well, not just from his time at LSU, but then obviously he coached under Saban in Alabama and coached as Kirby Smart's defensive coordinator. He's done a really nice job at Michigan State, but he's only in year two there. They're 7-0. The interesting part of this is I don't know if Mel Tucker would make that move, because remember, it was like it was pretty awkward for him to make the move out of Colorado after 1 year to go to Michigan State.
Boy, it is going to absolutely just crush Michigan State fans if they lose another coach to LSU. Michigan State is 7-0. They will be 7-0 going into the Michigan game on October 30th. This is quite a high that the program is on right now. And so I can see it either way. I could see him being loyal to Michigan State, you know, given the timing, or I could see him being like, you know, I don't know if I can win a national, I can have a lot of success here. I don't know if I can ever win a national title here. The last three LSU coaches have all won national titles. The last two of those have now been fired, which is tells you how cutthroat it is. It's kind of like the way people view Auburn is really more LSU now, but you know, it's, we did that. You guys did that best jobs survey. You surveyed a bunch of coaches around the country about a month ago. What are the top five jobs in college football? And LSU was one of them. So they should have their pick of the litter.
The kind of crazy thing you mentioned, Les Miles getting fired, that actually happened though about almost 10 years after he won the national title. Like if you look at what he did the next 2 years, I'm not saying he should have been fired for that reason after, but he had a 500 record in the SEC the next two seasons after winning the national title. I didn't realize that until looking back at it, you know, this morning. But then he ended up a couple of years after having the 500 record, they were 8-0 and played for the national title against Alabama. It's just, hey, the expectations are, you know, sky high, especially when the expectations are you got to deal with Nick Saban. I mean, there's nobody else in terms of anyone that's in your division. That makes it that much harder. And I'm interested to see how, you know, who they get from here, right? If you don't get Jimbo Fisher, who obviously had worked at LSU on Saban's staff, and it's going to take a lot to get him because he's paid a fortune. I have no idea where that is. You know, it's very, very, it's just a really interesting dynamic all around on a lot of levels.
Including, it's been a long time since I can remember since a coach got fired midseason and they let him play it out. Ron Zook comes to mind. I believe somebody on Twitter just said the same thing with Will Muschamp. It used to be fairly common, but I mean, imagine if they run the table. Imagine if they beat Alabama and he's gone. It's going to be interesting to watch. It's such a bizarre thing when you think about it. Like the same fans who have been clamoring for him to be fired are now going to turn around and give him kind of an appreciation tour, I would assume. I would think they're not going to boo him. They're going to cheer him because he did win them a national title.
You know, the other part is you mentioned the really inexperienced coordinators he has. Like yesterday against Florida was actually an impressive showing by Jake Peets, the offensive coordinator, who had really struggled before that. But look, now this is, I guess that's game seven. And I'm not expecting them to all of a sudden go on the run where, let's say, they would finish the second half of the season going 5-1. I would have thought if they had done that, they would have been safe, or he would have been safe. But, you know, like, I mean, so much I feel like of you know, this is like how good are your coordinator hires, right? I mean, Joe Brady, who wasn't technically the offensive coordinator, was a really good hire. The special teams guy, Greg McMahon, has been a terrific hire too. But as you mentioned, I think so much of what really started to have this thing go south was the Bo Pelini hire. And, you know, at that point, again, like I said, when you're working for an AD who didn't hire you at a place where there are a lot of people who have just, you know, the highest expectations, it's a really, really interesting dynamic. I know, you know, a bunch of people, you know, had said, oh, well, there's, you know, the Title IX case, and I'm not diminishing that because he was mentioned in one of the lawsuits, but from what I've heard, they were going to pay him over $17 million. You know, that's not a part of this. This is just, they want their own guy in there. That's as simple as that.
Let's talk about Florida for a second. So Ogeron's out. Dan Mullen, nobody ever talks hot seat with him, but I feel like that game yesterday was possibly a turning point moment. He has gotten a lot of mileage off of going to the SEC championship game last year. They had a really good season last year, but it petered out at the end. They've now lost 6 of their last 8 games to Power 5 opponents, including 2 to LSU, who just fired their coach. And it was pretty jaw-dropping to watch an LSU team that hadn't run the ball well at all year, just gash Florida over and over and over. Also, there'd been a lot of consternation among Florida fans about, you know, why isn't he playing Anthony Richardson more? Well, Anthony Richardson played more and for the most part played very well, sparked that offense. Now his interception at the end sealed the game for LSU, but they have an off week and then they played Georgia. Barring an absolute miracle, they are going to be 2-4 in the SEC after that Georgia game. And I don't think he's going to get fired this year, but boy, he could be digging himself quite a hole going into next year.
Yeah. I mean, you and I both have felt like he was a top 25 coach. He did a really good job at a tough place to win in Starkville. One of the things that I think didn't help him last year was not only when they would lose and have these really bad losses, he would compound them with kind of really tone deaf, really awkward statements in his post-game press conference, just kind of the way he handled it. But now I think it's even more than that. Like we said, I mean, you know, as rough as things have gone for LSU, I mean, Ed Orgeron's beaten Dan Mullen 3 times in a row and twice in a row with half a team. I just don't understand how this team has struggled as much as it has. And it's also a good time to be the Florida head coach. Yes, Kirby Smart has got it rolling in Athens, but Florida State and Miami are really down. So, you know, I'm curious as to see how much pressure now is under, you know, if Dan Mullen, and it almost feels like it's his track record where he plays these games against, you know, really good teams, and then he'll play them really competitive. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, you know, I think you and I both agree he's a good offensive coach on game days. To some degree, he reminds me a little bit of Charlie Weiss in that Charlie Weiss, the best thing he had at Notre Dame was he almost beat USC once when USC was on top of the world in the Bush push game. To Dan Mullen, I feel like since he's been in Gainesville, the best thing he's probably done is he gave Alabama a scare when nobody else was getting really close to them in 2020. And again, earlier this year, he gave Alabama all they could handle. Now that Gefford doesn't look quite as impressive considering A&M actually beat them. But when you look at some of these other games, I mean, 2-6 in your last 8 against Power 5 opponents is a real head scratcher.
Yep. And I don't know. I feel like, you know, the combination of them having what's turning out to be a pretty rough season at the same year that Georgia is having an absolutely dominant season. I mean, if that's their rival, you know, that's who they measure themselves against. We'll see in 2 weeks. If Georgia blows them off the field, that's not going to be pleasant for Dan Mullen. He's thrown some surprises before. Maybe it'll be another one of his close call losses.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I did not bring any French's mustard, water bottles, or golf balls to this recording.
Always when there's not like a big, big marquee game, there's usually some crazy stuff that happens. And I thought the Tennessee Ole Miss game was very compelling. And then it got just crazy off the rails, crazy. I think you were looking at the sideline, you're like, am I seeing stuff fly around? And then all of a sudden, yeah, you definitely were. And then it escalated. And it's a really ugly, embarrassing scene for not just Tennessee fans, but certainly from the SEC for Greg Sankey. Obviously, it's not all fans are this way, but just did seem like there was a bunch of them throwing stuff. And then even after, from all reports, I mean, I thought Cole Kubelik, who was a sideline reporter for SEC Network, was kind of outlining this. And it's fortunate that it did not, you know, get worse, that somebody didn't get hit by a full bottle of water thrown, or, you know, obviously the range ball that almost hit Lane or whatnot. I mean, those are that's not a good situation. I'm curious how they handle it going forward, what Greg Sankey is going to do. Cause you even heard the chancellor from UT was very, you know, she was very vocal on what, you know, how she felt about it. Now, what do they do about it?
You know, the thing is, Lane Kiffin being Lane Kiffin, he really leaned into that golf ball thing. I mean, to the point where, like, I don't know if he's ever going to let go of it. He was still had it in his hand, showing it during the post game interview. He was tweeting out George Costanza pulling a golf ball out of his jacket at the diner. You know, it wasn't like, I don't know, another coach in that situation might have gotten in front of the microphone and been very, you know, critical of it or alarmed or talking about how dangerous it was. He kind of just leaned into it as a joke. So that probably diffused things a little bit in the short term, but you know, I think the unfortunate thing is that Tennessee played very well. They did not, like, Tennessee football for years has been kind of embarrassing itself on the field. And that has just not been the case this year. We thought the worst for this team with all the transfers and all the chaos, and they've actually been respectable, including taking the number 13 team in the country right down to the wire, even after not getting that first down. They get the ball back with a chance to win. Joe Milton, unfortunately, for reasons only known to him, decided to try to run the ball in from that far away and run out of bounds. So yeah, it's a shame that the actions of a small minority of fans at the game, probably mostly students, ended up overshadowing the performance of their team. If you want to talk about embarrassing performances on the field, I would start with the number two Iowa Hawkeyes, who a week after being the toast of college football and winning a top five game, got beat 24-7 on their own field by the Purdue Boilermakers. When I was doing my picks this week, Bruce, I was like, you know, that's exactly the kind of game Iowa would lose. But I've been picking against them every week, and I can't do it again. And then sure enough, as soon as I picked the Hawkeyes to win, they don't just lose, they get blown out.
So you are the once you got on the bandwagon, bad things happened for
Greg. Hey, I did pick Purdue to cover, though, so I have that going for me. I think we just saw that, you know, the question everybody been asking, can they keep winning with this formula? You know, they finally had a game where they didn't force four turnovers, and it kind of exposed that their offense is really that terrible. And, you know, David Bell, credit to the Purdue receiver, who Scott Docterman, our Iowa writers, are like, if he turns pro after this year, Iowa fans are going to throw a party, because he has shredded them three straight years and over 200 yards receiving yesterday.
Yeah, David Bell eats up a lot of opponents. And look, Jeff Brohm is now, I think, 2-0 in the Big Ten against top three opponents, and both of them have been blowouts. And he got Ohio State and Urban Meyer a few years back. And this, I mean, Aiden O'Connell, I'm up. I think he almost had 400 yards passing. It was like you said, it wasn't even close. You know, that to me was a huge headline game. As you said, I think a lot of people were like hesitant to go all in on the Hawkeyes, but they had a bunch of nice wins and their defense had played really well. And then it petered out. I also thought another interesting result in the Big Ten on like off the radar game was, we talk about Nebraska and Scott Frost a bunch. That's a bad loss. I mean, you lose to a Minnesota team that a few weeks ago lost to Bowling Green and also was down their starting, their top two running back. And, you know, here we are with Nebraska. I remember I did my hot seat update last week and had a bunch of Nebraska fans going, no way, he shouldn't be on the hot, he shouldn't be even mentioned here because the AD and the president are firmly behind him. They've turned the corner. They're playing more competitive. And I agreed with all that. The thing, my hesitance was, all it's going to take is one dud performance in one of these other games that's not against Iowa or Ohio State, which they have still left. And sure enough, there was one. I don't know if Adrian Martinez was fully healthy. He was fine passing the ball, but we did not see him really do a lot of damage running the ball. And here we are with Scott Frost. I mean, just as an outsider looking in, you know, neither one of us is in Lincoln. How confident do you feel like Scott Frost is going to get another year after this?
I don't think that person or the people you're hearing from are wrong. I think that Trev Alberts really, really, really wants to avoid having to make a coaching change. And there was a lot of optimism coming off that Michigan game, even though it was a loss. But now they're 3-5. Somehow Nebraska has already played 2/3 of their schedule. The week that we're doing the midseason, the midseason awards. And yeah, like you say, still got to play Ohio State. I mean, I don't know that any game on that schedule you look at and go, yeah, he's definitely going to win that game. Obviously, Purdue better than we thought they were going to be. Wisconsin still seemed, I mean, they took all they could to beat Army, Iowa. And then, you know, I don't know. I mean, I find it hard to believe that they're going to finish better than 6-6. And even that would require quite a strong finish. So if he is 5-7 and he's been there 4 years and he's had a losing record all 4 years, come on. I know it's a $20 million buyout, but you can't continue with that. By the way, I had kind of forgotten about Purdue. You know, Jeff Brohm, after that big win over Ohio State, after that 2018 season, after he got, I mean, Purdue had to really give him a huge raise because everybody assumed he was going to go to Louisville when they fired Petrino back to his hometown. That family is such a institution there. And it was really surprising when he opted to stay at Purdue. And then they just kind of fell off the map and hadn't really done anything the last couple of years. In hindsight, that win over Oregon State was better than we thought. They hung with Notre Dame. And now after winning this game, like, they are basically tied for first. I think they're half game behind Iowa.
Yeah, I think that, look, it's kind of a wacky division right now, especially with, as we said, Iowa kind of sputtering a little bit.
Turning the page to Oklahoma and Caleb Williams, who followed up his Red River outperformance with just a monstrous game against TCU. I thought it was interesting that immediately after that, or maybe even during the game, all the Vegas books reset their Heisman odds, and Caleb Williams is now seventh, now has the seventh best Heisman odds. He didn't even play until last week. If he keeps this up, would you be comfortable voting for a Heisman winner who missed the first five-ish games of the season?
Depends on what the rest of the Heisman field looks like. You know, to me, Bryce Young is there. I think Bijan Robinson's terrific, but I'm not like, this does not feel right now like a very top heavy Heisman field.
Every time you think somebody's going to step up, I mean, you know, Kenneth Walker didn't have a great game against Indiana. Bijan Robinson's had two great first halves the past 2 weeks and then gotten shut down in the second half.
People are starting to talk themselves into, I feel like, Kenny Pickett from Pitt because they're winning a bunch of games, but I feel like there's still some skepticism there before that campaign takes flight. I don't know.
But why does it have to be a quarterback? You know, I feel
Gordon
like
Davis.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like every couple years, it's like, if ever there was a year for a defensive, like when Chase Young, but yeah, Jordan Davis, Will Anderson, Kayvon Thibodeau, there are some very, very good defensive players this year. And rather than just kind of talk yourself into Like you, I mean, I don't think Kenny Pickett's going to be in the mix at the end, but you know, don't default to the Alabama quarterback. Caleb Williams could, the way, you know, he could turn out to have like a Kyler Murray kind of finish to a season, but I still think there are going to be a lot of players out there who had outstanding full seasons. I'm not writing off Kenneth Walker yet, even though, you know, he didn't have 100 yards against Indiana. He's still the leading rusher in the country. I don't think I would do it. Never say never, but it just doesn't seem like it would be fair to any number of outstanding players, even if they're not quarterbacks, who did play the full season and were, you know, had outstanding seasons the whole way.
So is it a disqualifier for you?
No, like I said, I'm not going to disqualify anybody. I'd like to see how the season plays out. I just think it would take a pretty extraordinary circumstances. Now, one of those extraordinary circumstances might be if Oklahoma, who up until last week we thought was really shaky and living on borrowed time, goes 13-0. And that is starting to feel like a possibility. Now, I will say in the TCU game, you know, they look like an Oklahoma team. They scored 52 points. They're explosive, but their defense struggled, especially, you know, defending the receiver. And it was kind of like, oh, okay, this is like a vintage Lincoln Riley team. They're back to having to outscore people.
Oh, I totally agree with you. It makes for an interesting second half. I mean, you've already said, I don't get credit for saying that offense was going to break out. The Spencer Rattler shots on the sideline, like the whole thing of, it's just,
he did not look like a happy camper.
No. And you have like, people are going to throw the NIL stuff in his face. And, you know, look, I mean, it's all very, I don't say complicated, but it's just like, it feels like a lot of ways that you have such extremes going on with this. And I'm interested to see how it goes on from, you know, it's been 2 weeks. He's definitely a super talented quarterback and there's good pieces around him. And, you know, I'm fascinated to see how this plays out. I mean, is this the year Oklahoma actually can win a national title?
I was just going to ask you that because we talked about that in the off season. We were both, first of all, we were under the assumption Spencer Rattler would be the quarterback, but we were also feeling like Alex Grinch, you know, has been building toward this and that they're going to actually have a decent defense. And because of that, would this be the year that they actually get in and win a playoff game and maybe even the national championship? And I got to say, it's not crazy. And one of the reasons why is you look at the field and, you know, Georgia is just killing people. You know, they averaged 8.9 yards per play against Kentucky yesterday. It's not just the defense. But the thing with winning a national title is once you get to that championship game, you're going to play somebody really good. And I think to this point, Georgia's defense is dominating, but they're not playing offenses like Oklahoma's. And part of that is there aren't that many offenses like that this year. You know, maybe Ohio State is. I could see Georgia, you know, rolling all the way to the national championship game, and then they got to play an offense like Oklahoma's. It's definitely possible. Now I say that, and there's another undefeated team in their own state that they have to play, Oklahoma State, who I thought came back and won that Texas game in very impressive fashion. They have a good defense. You thought Oklahoma was going to have, Oklahoma State has it.
Yeah, Jim Knowles quietly has done a former Duke assistant, has done a terrific job.
Yeah. He should be a Broyles list on Broyles Award finalist.
Should. Bob Stoops in our pregame show did a really good breakdown of that 4-2-5 and what makes it so effective. And I think, you know what, more people should be talking about what he's doing. Bedlam could be the biggest it's been in I don't know when. I mean, I've done a bunch of Bedlam games that felt kind of big going.
And then they may have to turn around and play again.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, a lot to look forward to in the Big 12.
Let's finish up with this. The late game last night, Arizona State, Utah. I feel like our perception of the Pac-12 changes every week. First, it was Oregon's going to run away with it. Then Oregon loses to Stanford, and here comes ASU. UCLA was in there at some point. UCLA, by the way, hosting game day this week when they play Oregon. That's a surprise. But Utah started out pretty rough, lost to BYU and San Diego State. They made a change at quarterback to Cam Rising. Then they had this awful tragedy, Aaron Lowe murdered. And I think that happened during, they had an off week anyway. And since then they've come back and now they scored like 28 unanswered, 35 unanswered against ASU last night. And they're alone in first in the South now.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, look, I had Britton Covey on this Pac-12 Network weekly piece I do. Britton Covey's the receiver. He's a, you know, remarkable personality just in terms of just the most upbeat person you're ever going to be around. And we talked a lot about the roller coaster ride that program has been on with the tragedies, Ty Jordan, and now, you know, from a couple, I guess, late last month. And then they get a nice bounce back win at USC through it all. And then you knew that place was going to be rocking last night. I mean, it's a really loud, fun place to be at for a game. And they really took it to Arizona State. I mean, Kyle Whittingham, you know, we both, I think, have a ton of respect for him and what he's done there. It's a story that I think people are going to be talking a lot more about just because of, you know, the heartbreak that that program has been through and how those players, I wouldn't say those kids, but they're mature. And I think they showed the resilience, and it's, you know, hats off to all those guys at Utah for what they've been able to do.
And we gave them a shout out at the end of last week's for beating USC, but now it's not just like, oh, they got a nice win. It's, they could win this division and maybe even the conference. If you watch the Oregon Cal game Friday night, Oregon needed a last second stop to keep from having to go to overtime against a 1-5 team. Kayvon Thibodeau is out there wrecking people, and yet they still, you know, their offense is just so average now without CJ Verdell and with Anthony Brown just kind of doing the bare minimum. So I think it's, you know, I know there's probably some people listening now going, who cares? They're not going to send a team to the playoff. Look, we're both out here on the West Coast. We still find Pac-12 football to be pretty compelling, whether anybody else cares or not. And I'm fascinated to see how the second half of the season plays out, especially, like you said, with what could turn out to just be an absolutely remarkable story with Utah.
Yeah, it's going to be a crazy, crazy run in the Pac-12, because it always is. So as always, we look forward to your questions. You can send them to the audiblepod@gmail.com, and we'll see you later this week.